Welcome to the E-Commerce Lab by eComsy. This is the place for everything related to Amazon private label and e-commerce. Learn exactly what you need to start or scale your business. Get insights from the top industry experts who will discuss the latest trends and best practices in the world of Amazon. From choosing products and sourcing from a supplier to setting up your Amazon account and marketing your business, you will hear it here. Let's get started. Here is your host, Vincenzo Toscano.
Founder and CEO of eComsy, and today I'll bring you another special guest. His name is John Kyle, and he's the co-founder of China Product Pros, which is one of the top agencies out there when it comes to helping you figure out how to do proper sourcing from China. The reason why I wanted to bring JK today to the podcast is because I know we as Amazon sellers pretty much breathe in terms of living out of China or sourcing our products or business and everything. And I think it's super important to understand some of the tips and dynamics you need to master to, you know, also be successful in the Amazon game, because I feel like a lot of people, yes, they source from China, but unfortunately they do it wrong. And that's where we're going to be discussing today. So JK, it's a pleasure to have you on board. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm great, Vincenzo. Thank you so much for having me on the show. I'm excited to share with your audience.
Thank you. Thank you for coming. It's also a pleasure to have you here. You know, when I actually saw everything that you guys do at China Product Pros, I was very excited because, as I just say on the intro, I feel like so many people go to China for sourcing, but they do so many costly mistakes. They overpay in their cost of goods. They don't do the proper inspections. They don't really know how to find the best quality. And I'm sure a lot of people is eager to understand how we can avoid those costly mistakes, because at the end of the day, I strongly believe like 80%, 70 to 80% of your success on Amazon or as an e-commerce seller is what you pay when it comes to buying the product, right? If you have the margins wrong from day one, there's no marketing, there's no branding that's going to come and save you, right?
Absolutely. You can't market yourself out of a bad product situation. So
exactly,
and you can't price yourself premium just because you need to based on a margin. So the product also has to be premium. So I think there's a lot going on there that we can dig into.
Of course. Now, before we dive into that, I think something that I would like to do is learn more about you. And I'm sure people are so eager to know, you know, the path of JK, how you got started into the e-commerce space and how you founded your agency. So give us a little bit of that backstory.
Sure. Yeah, I'll be happy to. So for me, it all started when I went to China in 2006. It was originally supposed to be a gap year from university here in Canada. but as you will see, exactly. I was young. I was looking for adventure. I'm originally from Eastern Canada, a very small province called Prince Edward Island. And so I wanted to see the world. And I still remember my first night, Vincenzo. I turned on the TV. I didn't know anyone in China. And here I am watching the news. I couldn't understand a word they were saying. And I'm thinking to myself, what did I get myself into? Like, why did I do this? Fast forward, and I ended up majoring in Chinese language and culture at university in China. Met my beautiful wife there. We fell in love, as the story goes. And came back to Canada together 5 years later. So that's been great. Between living there and my travels ever since, I think total I've spent probably close to 8 or 9 years in China. Wow. I consider it to be like my second home. When I go back, I feel like, I'm going back home. it's funny.
Good.
But I'm heading back in April. So if you or any of your listeners are going to the Canton Fair, shoot me.
I'm actually thinking to go there. So because I was actually in the Canton Fair back in October.
Okay.
So I might go again. So if that's the case, for sure, I'm gonna hit you.
No, let's meet up in Guangzhou and have some fun. It's a great spot. So I've been from my studies in China, I've been involved in manufacturing since 2007. And I was on Alibaba in 2007. It was very different than it is today. I mean, the same core function of finding factories. But I was helping friends at the time, reaching out to factories, helping to provide information about their products and get samples. Then I, when I got back to Canada, I worked with a small to medium-sized clothing company here, and I got to wear many different hats. I was working in sales and marketing and manufacturing, and so that was really cool. From there, I went into management, and I worked in various different projects professionally before getting into entrepreneurship. So I was setting up and managing relationships with China. It involved a ton of travel. So I was traveling anywhere from 3 to 6 months a year. So it wasn't, and I was starting to raise a young family. So, and all that while I was reading, I like to say I was indoctrinating myself with books around entrepreneurship. So I read The 4-Hour Work Week, which I'm sure many of you listening have also read, not long after it came out. And so I tried various models in e-commerce, online space, I'll say. And I got to e-commerce in 2016. And so I jumped into that, launched our first brand. First brand ultimately didn't end up working out. So we launched a second brand in 2018 that's done really well. And we continue to have that until this day. So getting to the final point, I guess, so our brand's superpower has always been sourcing. So we get sourcing. My wife's background, she's Chinese. Her background is in international trade and logistics through her studies and her work experience. We ended up opening our own office on the ground in China for our own brand before we started the agency. And so over the years, we've been helping friends and acquaintances get into the sourcing space and helping them visit factories and pop in. And
you had assistance pretty much already.
I think it's how many agencies start.
That's the reality. You do it out of necessity, and then you realize that necessity is actually a necessity that other people have. And then the business goes further, you know?
So it was similar for us. And, you know, the classic stories of a lot of these friends and acquaintances we were helping, they were overpaying. They didn't have sight into who they were actually working with. They were having problems with consistent quality. So they'd get a really good order and they'd have amazing reviews. And then they would increase their order with a factory. And then guess what? Their second order would be awful. And then their reviews would tumble, their rankings would tumble along with that. And so we there's a number of things we just kept seeing. And so we decided to dive in just over 2 years ago. We're still very much a boutique agency. So that means we offer a lot of personalized attention. So any clients working with us, you'll be working really closely with my wife and I and our team. Nice. We have some great team members, many of which have a decade or 2 decades of experience in manufacturing. And the last thing I'll say, we're focused on extreme transparency. So something that really grinds my gears, that might be an Eastern Canadian saying, is that in the sourcing industry, it's really common for a lot of agencies to charge you less, but then to actually inflate the order cost to get their real cut. And the problem with so it creates this bad incentive for the agency to introduce you to a factory that might not be the best fit for you because they're getting a welcome bonus, or they're incentivized for you to pay more, because the more you pay, the more they get, and they're incentivized for you to have a higher MOQ. So we completely go against that. We don't accept any kickbacks, no commissions. We're completely brand representing. I could go on and on about that, but I'm really impassioned about making sure that there's full transparency in the process.
Very nice, very nice. I think, you said it right there. Like, I think one of the main issues people are having when it comes to sourcing is transparency, lack of transparency. Unfortunately, most agents out there, if you don't do the proper diligence, they might take advantage of you, as you mentioned, and they are not really fighting basically with the best interest in mind to get you the best cost of goods or whatever. They just want to make sure they get the biggest PO so they can get a big slice of the cake, right? Which I guess it brings me to my first question, because I feel like you as a seller, especially if you've never been to China, sometimes it's difficult to identify some of these red flags, right? Because you don't really know what is a red flag or what it isn't, right? So I guess it will be interesting high level to hear from you, given the fact that you've been doing this for so many years. Like, what are some of the red flags like you see on a daily basis that these are very easy to identify and they should, you know, give you that alert like something is up here?
Sure. So something immediately comes to mind, and it's actionable for someone that's sitting in their home office and wherever in the world that can't go to China. And so I'll start with the question is, do you know who you're working with in China? Because in China, there's typically two or three types of partnerships you can have with suppliers, one of which could be a trade company. So a trade company is a middleman that provides services between a buyer, an exporter, and factories.
They're flipping pretty much. They're flipping.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So some of them are legitimate and they offer a great service. But increasingly, I would argue that you don't need to go to a trade company. Many factories now have their own export departments, because what happens with a trade company is they are adding a markup to your cost of anywhere from 15 to 30 plus percent every single order. So sure, it's great on your first order because there's a certain ease of you know, placing your order, getting the sampling and everything done. It feels easier than maybe if you went with a factory. But again, that divide has been bridged. A lot of factories have want to have direct relationships, because on their side, if they work with a trade company, they also lose a big piece of their pie. So the actionable thing, and one of the ways to tell the difference is, you know, there's a lot of deep checks that we do for clients, and you can do a full audit. But if you want to do a quick check, look at their address. Search their address on Baidu Maps. So Google Maps does not really work in China.
I found out that in October. Yeah. I was trying to get to a restaurant. Sure. It's like, GPS in China?
No, there is, but you have to go through Baidu or one of the various local services. But go to Baidu Maps. If the supplier's address is in an office tower zone, then there's almost 100% likelihood that they're a trading company. If their address is in an industrial zone with a lot of other factories, then they're more likely to be a factory. So that's an initial kind of surface level, easy check you can do to figure out who you're working with.
Good. Yeah, I think actually that's a good trick, because even for myself, I remember when I was getting started, I was working with different suppliers. And then after 6 months to 1 year, I found out they were actually just trade companies, and I was overpaying. And just by finding that out, it was a huge lift from me in terms of my profit, because now, as you say, I had 15, 20% more margin on my cost of goods. Yep. And that on Amazon, we know, especially nowadays with all the competition, is key. Very good tip. Now, I think when it comes to that, yes, very important to understand who you work with. But I guess other red flags that maybe you can help us navigate is how you should actually make sure you're getting the best price. Because, yes, maybe you're working directly with a factory, but there's thousands of factories, right? So how you make sure they're not giving you the international price? You see what I mean?
Sure. Yeah, no, I understand what you mean. Yeah, so I think a big part of that is ensuring you're reaching out to enough factories, so 10 plus factories, depending on which product area you're in and the level of customization, you may be able to reach out to more or less. And then by reaching out to more, you'll get a broader spectrum of the pricing that's out there. But I do always caution sellers that's not just about price. It's about many things. So it's about their lead time, how long it's going to take them to make it. It's about you may have quality. MOQ constraints. So yeah, there's other things to consider, pricing being one of them. So yeah, you can get a good early idea through that initial request for quotes that you put out. And generally you'll find a range of factories highballing you. It's just like if you want to, let's say you want to refinish your kitchen, and you reach out to a contractor and they're super busy and they're like, yeah, I'll work with this guy for 100% more, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
So it's a lot like that.
That testing to see how much you're willing to pay. And if you
Exactly. So if you will get those super high quotes, you'll normally get quotes in the middle, and then you'll get some lowball quotes, which you also need to question, because either they like to get you in the door and then suddenly, oh, the quote's higher because your material changed.
Yeah.
Right?
Or the quality's low.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think it's important to reach out to a good number of factories and ensure that you have an idea of who they are, whether they're a trade company or a factory. And then you can start having those discussions around pricing. And it's really once you get the sampling and you see the quality of the product that you get the full picture of if their pricing is good or not.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think even with the sampling, I'm sure you have experienced this, like they could give you an amazing sample. And then when the actual bulk order comes, you know, that's the tough side of things. And this brings me to my next question, which is inspections, because I feel like, especially when people are getting started, they say, the quality of the sample are good, the videos are good. Like, you know, I want to trust them. I don't want to pay this $300 and so on. Like, what is your take on that? Like, do you think inspections is a must regardless of the relationship? Or sometimes you can skip.
I think almost every single time you should have an inspection. Because if you look at that $300-$500, whatever it might be, depending on the scope of the inspection, I mean, you can easily spend that amount of money in a day on PPC, as I'm sure you're aware. And if you export a bad product, the cost of cleaning up that mistake, it's going to be 10 times, more than 10 times what you would have paid for that inspection. So it's a peace of mind thing. I would, in fact, suggest if the brand can afford it, to not only just do a pre-shipment inspection before your product leaves the country after it's all done and packaged up, but also do an in-production inspection or at the very least, let's say you can't afford that, at the very least have a lot of check-in or touch points with your factory. So you need to be asking them questions all along. How is production going? Can you send me some photos? Can you send me some videos? Are you running into any challenges? Do we have to possibly make any changes to the product? Because sometimes a factory, depending on their level of communication, they may or may not openly share that with you, and you'll discover it at the very end. So whatever you do, definitely do the pre-shipment inspection at the very end, but as much as you can, as much as you're able to afford with your budget, either do that in production inspection, or at the very least have some check-in points where you're communicating with the factory.
Nice. Now, when it comes also to sourcing, I feel like a lot of the questions I get sometimes is people struggle to know how they can make sure that the factory or that they're working with, they actually have the right paperwork, right, to actually manufacture this product, export it, and all of that. So I think that sometimes can become like very complex and technical, because, you know, sometimes depending on the product, that thing can become challenging to actually validate from your side. Yeah. So what are some of the red flags, maybe high level, you could put in place in terms of criteria that you could say, yeah, if this guy's sending me this, or avoiding this, like that means they don't have the paperwork. Like, do you do some kind of technique there to find out when it comes to documentation?
Yeah, so we do a full audit whenever we're doing factory checks for clients as part of the vetting process. We're looking at the business records that are in file with local governments in China. So usually, if you find a supplier in Alibaba, let's say you're doing it yourself, Alibaba has a decent audit process themselves, and they should have, you know, if the factory is listed for 10 years, usually that is true. It's probably the odd time where they may have gotten away with spoofing some of that, but usually it's true. So I would say one thing to be especially careful for is it's really common for factories especially in Alibaba, to post photos of products they could make, but actually have never made before. So not only do you want to check the business licenses and ensure that the factory is set up for export, that they have in fact been in business for 10 plus years, that they are indeed who they say they are. But you can take that a step further when you're looking at making your product. You want to ensure they have experience with your product, because you can imagine the pain you need to go through as a guinea pig for a factory figuring out your product. You really, really want to avoid that. And factories, you know, they have a strong sales department usually, and they'll tell you, "Oh yeah, yeah, we can make this product.
Promise everything. They're gonna promise."
Yeah, exactly. They'll promise you the moon. So it's important to do some type of audit. Again, depending on your budget, if you're able to hire an agency, we do a great job at audits, as do others. Or at the very least, ask the factory for a virtual visit. So ask them to jump on a WeChat call with you, do a virtual visit of their factory, check out their showroom. Do they have other products in the showroom like yours? If not, there's a good chance they probably don't have experience in that product area, and you may want to avoid them.
That's a very good tip. Yeah, the virtual one is nice because, yeah, usually in the past, I remember when I tried to get them on a call and they avoid the call or they don't want to answer. That means
that's a good red flag right there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Now, I think the other thing that people will be interested to know is how you can negotiate cost of goods and get the best one you can. Because let's be honest, like usually the price they give you, even if it's a fair price, you can always take it down by different techniques, right? So yeah. I'm curious to know which are some of the techniques you would recommend that you feel like they can be successful when it comes to lowering the cost of goods when it comes to social return.
Yeah, I like this question a lot because I think it's so practical for all of us as brands. So the first thing I would say on this is don't be afraid to rock the boat. A lot of you listening and certainly many I've spoken with and myself to a degree, I think culturally I've been raised to not over negotiate. Usually the price you pay is the price
you pay. Feel guilty.
Yeah, exactly. I've overcome that through not completely, but somewhat through my travels and work. Yeah. I am not the strongest negotiator on our team. That's my wife or a lot of our staff in the China office. They're so good.
Women usually are very good negotiating.
Vincenzo, it's so funny. You have like my wife, for example, she will be negotiating with a factory and it seems like they're in a huge fight. And then they'll finish their negotiations and they'll be laughing and talking about family and things are all good again. First thing I would say, don't be afraid to rock the boat. It is culturally very much accepted to negotiate. In fact, you should negotiate, I would say, on every single order with your factory. And so
even take it more seriously, to be honest, in China. Yes. If you're not going to negotiate, they actually will take advantage because they don't feel you're serious business.
Absolutely. Man, you know? Absolutely. No, that's definitely something we've seen. So get in there, negotiate. You don't have to be a master negotiator. It's really about bringing to the table your pain points, what help you need from them. It's knowing your position. So, you know, if you're coming into a brand new factory, you want to only make an MOQ, an order of 500 units. You don't have a ton of leverage. Yet. Yeah. Right. So you can try to get a better price, sure. You can try to get a better lead time. You can try to get better payment terms. But should you squeeze them to death on that first order, I would say no. So pick out one or two things you want to negotiate on, whether it's price, whether it's that lead time. You'd like to see if they can make it in 30 days instead of 45, for example. Mm-hmm. And then as you get to your second order, let's say you're putting in 2,000 units, then you have more leverage. You have history with them. You're putting in a larger order. They're seeing you're growing. And then you can come back to the table with a bit more weight on your side, so to speak.
Yeah.
So we find it to be a very gradual process. It's not a one-off typically where you're around a board table and you're really going at it. It's more of a gradual process where you're chipping away. And the other thing I'd say is to try to understand what's important for the factory. So as you talk about your pain points, why you need these concessions in negotiations, you should be listening. We need to be actively listening as brands for what their pain points are, and trying to find perhaps not a middle ground. We always want it to be a bit more in our advantage as a factory, but it's really, really important not to just ignore them, but to understand what's important for them. Let's say that you want a better price, and they say, it's not really possible. So I would follow that up with why isn't it possible? Like, what are some reasons? Mm-hmm. What are some challenges for you on pricing? And then they might get into it. They're like, well, you know what? Because your MOQ is small, and mm-hmm. we need to place an order of at least this much for raw materials. And then suddenly you can get to perhaps a point of flexibility where you're like, okay, knowing that you have to place more for raw materials, what if we placed an order for 1,000 units worth of raw materials, but we only manufacture 500. We'll pay for the 1,000, and then you can use it on our next order. So I think it's important to be, again, active listeners, asking questions, and looking for these opportunities to get what we want, and usually some different flexible ways that may not have been immediately known.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's all about building that first, the relationship, like creating that you know, you can trust each other, and then from that you start evolving. Because I guess that's a huge mistake that I see people doing. They go all in, they go from $8 cost of good, and you want to drop it to $4. Like, come on. Like, you're being realistic, and then exactly. You lose the relationship, you know? And that's
yes. Yeah, it can sour it. Yeah.
Now, I think to start concluding, actually, what I wanted to add, which I think it would be very interesting to add to the audience, is like, I'm sure we already talked about, you know, as you mentioned, the payment terms, like deferring that to a later date and all of that. But what other tips do you think, from your experience, could help when it comes to reducing costs overall? Like, is there any other thing maybe we can bring to the table, like maybe materials or things like that? Like, what is your experience with that as well?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So I think two things come to mind. So one's packaging. Like in our brand, and we work with clients to optimize packaging. So whether that's decreasing the size of packaging so you get more favorable FBA rates, it's also going to save you on COGS because you can fit more units in the container, right? The other possible upside of packaging, like an example of what we did in our brand, we used to have full color packaging across our entire 25 SKU product line. And what we looked at doing was how much would we save if we went from having full color packaging to just a white box with black printed ink on it. So also nicely branded, but very minimalist looking. And we polled an audience several times to try to get an idea of, we mocked it up and polled it. Mm-hmm. And thankfully it received really good feedback. People said, oh, this looks more premium.
Nice.
And it's really clear what the product is. And so on the cost of goods side, we ended up saving 10 to 20 cents per unit because of that packaging change. So it was a case of you know, the best of both worlds. We reduced cost and we improved customer perception of our product.
Nice.
So look at your packaging, definitely. The other thing you may want to look at is, as we are in various points of our brand's evolution, the method in which we ship may no longer be the best way. So depending, so if we're talking purely of COGS, you may, so one example is looking at skipping your 3PL, so your third party logistics company. Let's say, for example, you're ultimately sending to Amazon.com for sale. So I think a lot of brands over COVID, they would have sent in through a 3PL. There was inventory restrictions. You couldn't send that much into to Amazon. And so if you haven't looked at that model since then as a brand, I think it's important to re-examine that, because I think off the top, if you skip that 3PL and you send direct to FBA, you're probably looking at saving maybe 7, 8, maybe more margin points. And we work with clients on that. We have a warehouse network in China, so we can hold stock here for usually a much, much lower rate, if not free sometimes with the factory. And I think here, Vincenzo, like, you know, I like to learn from sellers from around the world. And I think that Chinese sellers are particularly good at logistics. And this is what Chinese sellers do, right? They send direct to FBA from China. They hold locally in China. So if there's anything we can learn from them, I think there's a lot to be learned on logistics. And if your business model allows, this is a good way to save margin by going direct.
Awesome. So it's been a pleasure to have you on board, JK. I mean, so many tips, so many insights, and I'm sure, you know, these are just a few of the bunch we should be doing to successfully source from China. So I'm sure a lot of people might want to work directly with you guys, because you guys have so many years of experience and have the whole team to basically mitigate all these things. So tell us a little bit about how people can reach out and basically work with you when it comes to sourcing from China.
Thank you. So you can reach out through chinaproductpros.com, or you can find me on LinkedIn. I'm active on LinkedIn under John Kyle Beaton. Reach out, connect. Nice. I love connecting with sellers. Those are two of the best ways to reach out.
Awesome, JK. So been a pleasure. Hopefully we see each other in April. In the meantime, you know, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for coming.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Bye-bye. See you. Bye-bye. See you in the next one.
Thanks for listening to The E-Commerce Lab by Ecomsy. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. While you are at it, we would appreciate it if you could leave an honest rating and review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. That will make it easier for others to find out about the show and benefit from it. Want more? Visit our website at www.ecomsy.com, where you can get your first consultation for free. Or find us on Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn at ecomsy.